Välkommen till ett ljudprogramblad inför operan Tosca på Värmland Opera. I detta programblad får vi höra regissör Daniel Kramer och scenograf och kostymör Carlos Sotto berätta om sitt samarbete och vad de vill säga med sin produktion. Dessutom berättar dirigent Daniela Muska om sitt musikaliska arbete med orkestern och sångarna. Och avslutningsvis får vi höra Björn Eduard om hur det gick till när Puccini komponerade operan.
Den 22 februari har Värmland Opera premiär på Tosca av Giacomo Puccini. Det kommer att bli den tredje uppsättningen som görs på Värmland Operas scen, och det är ingen slump, eftersom det är en av världens mest älskade och populära operor. De förra produktionerna gavs 1985 och år 2000. Handlingen i operan är i korthet ett triangeldrama mellan sångerskan Floria Tosca, konstnär Mario Cavaradossi och den mäktige baron Scarpia. Tosca och Cavaradossi är ett kärlekspar, men eftersom Scarpia är mäktig och tar det han vill ha, gör han närmanden mot Tosca. Han torterar Cavaradossi för att få sin vilja igenom med Tosca. Istället för att falla till föga för Scarpia dödar dock Tosca honom, men skriver samtidigt på sin egen dödsdom. Sångarna vi hör och ser i huvudrollerna är Ann-Louise Lögdlund i titelrollen, Adam Fransen som Cavaradossi och Cosma Rauner Kron i rollen som Scarpia. Originalberättelsen sker mot bakgrund av Napoleonkriget år 1800 i Italien. Produktionen, som har premiär i februari 2024, har i Daniel Kramers regi blivit ett samtida drama för att både intressera inbitna operafans och helt nya åhörare. Han berättar bland annat att han och scenograf Carlos Sotto gjort Cavaradossi inte till porträttmålare som i originalet, utan som en nutida videodesigner som dessutom är regimkritisk och rebellisk. Hör Daniel Kramer här.
Hello, my name is Daniel Kramer and I am the director of Tosca. Tosca is such an incredible iconic opera, and I think when we touch these masterpieces that people know the title of and people know even the music from ice skating, from TV commercials, from Hollywood movies, they're really, for me, recruitment operas. It's such an incredible first opera for someone to see. It's such accessible, passionate music. Puccini sort of defined film music for this century. With Wagner, and then of course John Williams, who's so much in the territory. So when I approach an opera like this, it's about getting classical audiences and new audiences really excited about opera. So that immediately translates to my first collaborator, which is the design team. And with Carlos, we knew that we wanted, you know, you have to be in some classical world. You're in a church, you're in someone's private quarters, you're in some strange execution room in Act Three. And you need to be in those places to have the opera make sense, to have every word make sense. But our big first question was, what sort of artist is Mario? In the original, he's a classical painter, and he's painting Mary Magdalene, and we wanted to make him a much more modern artist, you know, like an installation artist, a video artist, much more contemporary, like Ai Weiwei or Anish Kapoor, these kind of living icons who play with light and sculpture. And I'd worked with Frieder Weiss, the incredible Berlin-based projection artist, on about three other shows, and I just knew that Frieder's interactive video system was the right modern edge. That it's kind of like a video game, MTV video meets opera. The visuals just keep shifting, and I hope keeping a contemporary audience very engaged. You know, I think we come from the Instagram generation now. We're used to just scrolling through image after image. And that's one way, of course, that we've learned in television and film to keep the audience's attention. They shift the camera every 3 seconds, which forces the lower brain to stay focused on what we're doing. So with this live video design that Mario is kind of curating, this modern installation of the Virgin Mary, Mary Magdalene in this mythical church, we're also able to bring this magic of light and video, video game, LED, neon, color that is all over the music. This is such colorful music. And so we wanted to bring that color to life while honoring the classical story of this man and woman in love and, yeah.
Daniel berättar också att han samarbetar med videoartisten Frieder Weiss som skapat alla videoprojektioner i föreställningen som säkert kommer att tilltala en yngre publik som är van vid snabba klipp på tv, film och tv-spel men som även är vackert och tilltalande för den mer klassiska publiken. Vidare berättar han om karaktärerna Skarpia och Tosca i vilket han ser en mäktig skurk och en oskyldig kvinna som hamnar i ett sammanhang hon verkligen inte önskar.
Tosca from day one for me was so close to Zara Leander or Marilyn Monroe. This incredible woman from really organic rural roots who ends up being a global superstar and getting very mixed up with the wrong politicians. Even though she probably has very few political opinions, she ends up in bed with a monster and navigating her sexuality of so many women were forced to do in history, and sadly probably are still forced to do. She needs to use her sexuality to win her lover's freedom. And she really has to compromise her body and her integrity with the lascivious, disgusting, fabulous Skarpia, who is one of the most beloved villains of all time. And of course, the price becomes their lives. And therein is the tragedy. Well, Skarpia in the original is, of course, kind of the chief of police. Some people make him the president. Some people make him the prime minister. He could be just an evil thug gangster. What we know is he's in charge of a prison, and a very important prisoner has escaped, and he is hunting him like a dog. And we know that Skarpia has zero morals. He is his own court of law. He is a fascist or a tyrant in the sense of Donald Trump or some people might say Putin or President Xi or we can name many countries that have men who are perhaps breaking the rules on leadership, integrity. And but what's interesting about Skarpia as well is while he's a political monster and will kill anyone who crosses his path, he is in love with art. He's in love with beauty. He's in love with song. He loves Tosca because of her voice. He loves Mario because of his sculptures. He, like the very horrifying Hitler, is a romantic and really values art and the image and the human body in form and movement and sound. So it makes him this very, well, refined monster. And he's kind of irresistible. He's a snake. He's full of charm. He's handsome as can be in our production, luckily. And he's broken. They're all broken. And there's this crazy moment we arrive at in Act Two where somehow we care about this monster, or we see this monster's, like all monsters, broken soul and her broken soul and everyone trying to navigate a world towards a better life or some sort of quote-unquote love. A very mysterious definition in this show. What is love? Are Mario and Tosca truly in love? Scarpy is terrified of love and literally sings about preferring power over people. So he's a delicious monster.
Daniel Kramer har mejslat fram föreställningen tillsammans med scenograf och kostymdesigner Carlos Soto, som börjar med att berätta att detta är första gången han jobbar med en så klassisk opera som Tosca.
So my name is Carlos Soto and I'm a New York-based scenic and costume designer and creative director. And I've worked for now 26, 27 years in theater. I started very, very early in the, let's say, New York downtown scene, particularly with an American theater and opera director named Robert Wilson, with whom I worked for 25 years. I didn't study theater. I studied art history. And so my education in theater was practical, let's say. I have to confess that this is my first work on a canonical subject matter. Let's say I've been blessed and cursed my entire life to work on new creations, but it was a really daunting task to take on something that's so, in some ways, monolithic. I think Tosca's a very well-known opera. It comes from a very well-known subject matter when it was written, so people have expectations or there are certain conventions that one can follow. And this is also my first time working together with Daniel. And as it happened with time and the world, he'd been engaged to do it quite some time before he even approached me to do it. So he had a very clear idea, I think, of a concept and where he wanted to go. In some ways, we crafted it together, but there wasn't this way of playing and organically finding things, which is also fine. I tend to work on very different timescales from the very luxurious operatic timescale of having years to develop something or sometimes just a few weeks to develop something. But we knew from the beginning that it shouldn't be of the German school of let's put Tosca in a cruise ship, right? Or let's come up with a kind of illustrative concept where you're just putting a different package on a material that everybody's familiar with. And we wanted to look at, in certain ways, the psychology of it. You know, I think that's one of the interesting things about the opera. It's also very difficult as a contemporary person to look at it and understand a lot of the politics involved. But a lot of it is also very prescient to our experience today. I've always been a world builder and have always been interested in making sets and costumes together, but for many reasons, a large part of my career has been in costumes. I'm very attuned to textiles, and I love the use of textiles on stage, things that are fluid, things that are translucent, how it makes things feel further away or up close and somehow immaterial and ephemeral. And in this way of making this modular architecture that can appear, disappear, compress, dilate, etc., wanted to find something that felt a little bit more concrete, and had been thinking for some time about the use of chain or beads or even fringe, because it's even more ephemeral than fabric, and you can walk through it and all sorts of things, and it reacts to movement, dances. And happened on this material. It's an architectural material for industrial applications, usually in public building. And we and Daniel loved the idea that chain also has a connotation of imprisonment or sadomasochism or other things. It looks very dainty and magical on stage, but can also have this dark quality. And also has this beautiful tinkling sound as it moves or as it goes up and down on the pipes or as people walk through it. Yeah, it just felt correct.
Carlos berättade att han är intresserad av kyrkorummet Och att han och Daniel komprimerat originaloperans redan tajta tidsram på ett dygn till att också låta skeendet ta plats i en och samma byggnad. I valet av hundratals kedjor som hänger från taket fann Carlos ett material som beroende på hur man belyser det både kan se ogenomträngligt ut som betong eller lätt och transparent och som till och med kan låta och klirra när det vidrörs. Men han betonar att han först och främst bygger upp en värld, en canvas som de övriga medarbetarna kan fortsätta att skapa på. Musiken då. Dirigenten Daniela Muska presenterar sig och hur hon jobbat med instuderingen av musiken.
Hello everyone, my name is Daniela Muska and I am the orchestra conductor of the new production of Puccini's Tosca at Vermland Opera in Karlstad. And we are very lucky in Vermland Opera that first you take so much time to play so many performances of a piece, and then of course you didn't play Tosca for many years. And this was beautiful. I mean, I've never done this before, meeting an orchestra who has not played a piece, like in all the musicians together. And it was beautiful because there was this incredible openness, a lot of generosity from the musical point of view. The musicians were very open to try out ideas, maybe to see, okay, can it work that way? Maybe we can make it this other way. And also they came up with musical offers. And so I enjoyed it very much. I was very pleased to hear that the improvement was very fast after the first reading. But that I already knew about this orchestra since I had a symphony concert with them in 2022. So I wasn't expecting many difficulties. I really believe that an operatic conductor should work with the singers since the first day. So when you want to do an opera, especially an opera like this one, such a big opera, and you have to be there from the very first day. You cannot take so much work parallel. And by doing so, you really get to know the different voices and you know what they need. Not all singers are all different. Not only the roles are different, because Puccini used very different techniques how he wrote music for the different roles for all of them, but also you learn how the soloists as individual musicians respond to you, and you learn to cope with it, or you learn to use it depending if it's a good response or a bad one. And so I've been here since the beginning of January. For first we had 5 weeks of piano rehearsals I think 4 weeks, and then I met the orchestra in the fifth week. I met the orchestra alone, I worked with the orchestra alone for 4 days, and then I worked with the orchestra and singers without staging for 2 days, and then now we are just coming out of 3 days of stage and orchestra rehearsals. So this is how you build up the layers. This is also very different, how, you know, every person has a different way of learning, developing, approaching. So some people, some singers, I would say, because we are speaking about Italian language, some singers are really willing to hear and to improve their pronunciations. And some others, they just want to keep the way they're doing. And in the end, I'm not a language coach, but I can, so that's not my job. But I can, of course, offer my skills, since in my early days, while I was still studying conducting, I have been working as a pianist and voice coach. So I know how to do it if it's requested and wanted, but I'm not used to force anyone. But yes, it can definitely be a plus to have Italian as a mother tongue when you're doing Italian opera. I think that an opera like Tosca, it can be, for example, also an opera like Berg's Lulu. I mean, these operas that have, or Shostakovich opera, thinking of different things, these operas that have a very, very high level energy all the time, regardless of what energy it is. It can be, in Tosca we have the energy of love and passion, we have the energy of violence, we have the energy of pressure and threatening, but everything, the torture we have, everything is a very high level of energy. So, but the problem is to, I mean, the problem, the, how can I say, the challenge of working at an opera like Tosca is to be able to deal with the level of energy that the opera requires by keeping your rationality and your distance from what you are doing. And it's like being one person that is watching another, but it's still you, because you cannot get too involved by the emotions that are happening on stage. In the same time, if you are a singer, you are acting those emotions, and if you are a conductor, you are anticipating and trying to influence those emotions and to inspire better than influence. I think that this is the difficulty, to keep a cold mind, to be very rational, very planning what coming next, and still feel and be passionate about every note that you're going to play. When you are a music lover and you're going to listen to Tosca, I think that's one of the best things that can happen to you. I think this is really wonderful. I mean, I go myself in to hear, listen to Tosca if I have time when I'm in Berlin, just even if I know it, just because it's so beautiful to be exposed to this wide range of very peculiar emotions. I really believe that music can also teach us by showing it, can teach us what we should avoid in life. Tosca is not an opera to be inspired by how to be as a person. I wouldn't like to be any one of the characters, and I wouldn't like to meet them in real life, no one of them. But all of them are way of being for human beings. They are very realistic. As a matter of fact, they are very realistic Italian people from the time where the piece has been written. And I think this can teach us what we don't want to be. And that's also important. When you listen to certain music, you can remember, in case you have forgotten, that violence is never an option, that threatening is never an option, that asking a woman for a sexual favor in exchange of what she's asking, demanding from you, that's never an option. And of course, that's logical, hopefully for everyone. But in case it isn't, then you can see it on stage if you come to Tosca, and you can remember that this is not the person you want to be, hopefully.
Tillblivelsen av operan Tosca. Tosca är en av de mest dödliga operorna. Ingen av centralgestalterna, hjälte eller skurk, överlever. Och detta bara inom loppet av ett halvt dygn. Operan har sitt ursprung i den franske pjäsförfattaren Victorien Sardous teaterstycke La Tosca från 1887. Dramat skrevs för den legendariska skådespelerskan Sara Bernhardt och firade stora triumfer runt om i Europa. Den spelades mer än 3000 gånger bara i Frankrike. Efter att Puccini i januari 1889 sett Sardous pjäs La Tosca med den gästspelande Bernard på Teatro Filodrammatici i Milano skriver Puccini den 7 maj till förläggaren Giulio Ricordi: "Jag ser i denna Tosca operan jag behöver. Utan några uppblåsta proportioner, inga utvecklade spektakel, den skulle heller inte behöva den sedvanligt överdrivna mängden musik." Ricordi skickade sin agent i Paris, Emmanuel Muzio, för att förhandla med Sardou. Denne föredrog att pjäsen skulle bearbetas av en fransk kompositör. Sardou beklagade sig också över det svala mottagande pjäsen fått i Italien och då särskilt i Milano. Han påpekade också att andra kompositörer hade visat intresse för verket. Ändå kom Ricordi till sist överens med Sardou och gav librettisten Luigi Illica uppdraget att skriva ett scenario för en bearbetning. 1891 avrådde Illica Puccini att ge sig i kast med materialet eftersom han menade att pjäsen svårligen kunde omarbetas till musikalisk form. När Sardou uttryckte sin oro över att anförtro sitt mest lyckade skådespel till en relativt ny kompositör vars musik han inte ens tyckte om, blev Puccini förnärmad. Han drog sig ur samarbetet och Ricordi anlitade istället kompositören Alberto Franchetti. Illica skrev ett libretto till Franchetti, vilken dock aldrig kände sig bekväm med uppdraget. Den åldrande Giuseppe Verdi fick också ta del av materialet och uttryckte sin uppskattning. Han menade att han gärna hade komponerat en opera över ämnet om han bara hade varit yngre. I mars 1895 ser Puccini återigen en uppsättning av pjäsen och han blir på nytt intresserad av verket. Det är inte känt hur det gick till när Franchetti blev av med uppdraget till förmån för Puccini, men med Ricordis moraliska stöd blir det alltså Puccini som kommer att stå som upphovsman till operan Tosca. Ännu är det dock många turer som återstår. I december 1895 engageras den andra librettisten Giuseppe Diacosa för att utveckla vers till operan. Han och Puccini är dock oeniga om mycket och Diacosa vill bryta kontraktet men övertygas motvilligt att fortsätta arbetet. Året 1897 ägnar Puccini tid och arbete till att uppnå så mycket autenticitet som möjligt. För den religiösa processionen under Scarpias aria i första akten skrev Puccini till en präst i Rom för att erhålla den korrekta versionen av den liturgiska unisona sången, vilken han visste varierade från region till region. Han spårade också upp en expert på kyrkklockor för att kunna identifiera vilka klockor som användes vid morgongudstjänster och vilket tonläge den största klockan i Peterskyrkan hade. Puccinis plan var att använda klockorna i den tredje aktens förspel tillsammans med en herdegosses sång från fjärran i gryningsscenen vid Castel Sant'Angelo. Även herdegossens sångtext på romerska Laude Sospiri specialbeställdes. Efter allt förberedande arbete och kontroverser med pjäsförfattaren och de båda librettisterna var det så dags för Puccini att 1898 börja komponera. Han stod inför uppgiften att göra ett nedkok av en fransk pjäs i 5 akter med många skådespelare till en italiensk opera i 3 akter med ett fåtal sångare. Musikaliskt är Tosca strukturerat som ett genomkomponerat verk där arior, recitativ och körer är sammanvävda till en helhet. Puccini använder sig av ledmotiv i Wagners anda för att identifiera karaktärer, föremål och idéer. Som ett exempel utgörs Scarpias ledmotiv av de tre kraftfulla ackorden som inleder operan. Under 1898 reser Puccini två gånger till Paris, dels för att där se sin tidigare opera La Bohème spelas, men också dels för att träffa pjäsförfattaren Sardou. I januari 1899 reser han dit igen och träffar Sardou. Denne insisterar på att Tosca, så som i pjäsen, ska ta sitt eget liv genom att kasta sig ut från kastellet, medan Puccini haft för avsikt att låta henne tyna bort i vanmakt efter Cavaradossis död. Puccini låter sig övertalas. Den 29 september är operan färdigkomponerad. Förläggaren Ricordi hade fortfarande synpunkter på tredje aktens musikaliska utformning, men Puccini lät sig inte bevekas. Toscas aria i andra akten Vissi d'arte lade Puccini till i sista stund. Eftersom Ariclea d'Arclé som sjöng Toscas parti beklagades över att hennes karaktär inte hade något passande solonummer. Puccini hade befarat att arian skulle stanna upp det dramatiska flödet i andra akten. Det politiska klimatet i Italien var inflammerat vid sekelskiftet 1900. Sprängattentat hade förekommit. Urpremiären av Tosca var planerad till den 13 januari 1900, men sköts upp till nästa dag, den 14, på Teatro Costanzi i Rom på grund av oro för attentat. Förväntningarna på Tosca var stora och salongen var fylld med politiska och konstnärliga prominenser, bland annat drottning Margherita, som i Puccinis unga år understött honom ekonomiskt. Föreställningen började tumultartat med en upprörd publik. Dirigenten Leopoldo Mugnone tvingades slå av musiken tills stämningen lugnat ner sig. Denne Mugnone, dirigenten, hade tidigare i Barcelona varit med om ett sprängattentat inne på teatern under en föreställning. Nu visade det sig att publikens upphetsning berott på senkomna premiärbesökare som uppträtt störande. Föreställningen kunde återupptas och avslutas planenligt. Te Deum och ariorna togs om och ridån gick slutligen ned mitt i natten efter att Puccini och ensemble mottagit publikens ovationer. Kritiken var avvaktande medan publiksuccén var total. Den spelades för fulla salonger och via La Scala i Milano med Toscanini som dirigent gjorde Tosca på kort tid sitt segertåg världen runt. Till Puccinis stora glädje gjorde Tosca stor succé vid den franska premiären på Opera Comique i Paris den 13 oktober 1903. Den då 72-årige upphovsmannen till pjäsen La Tosca, Victorien Sardou, stod denna gång som regissör till operan Tosca.
Ni har hört ett ljudprogramblad om Tosca med regissör Daniel Kramer, scenograf Carlos Soto, dirigent Daniela Musca samt Björn Eduard som berättade om Puccini.